And hey, so our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for 30 to 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we ask that you just time your sharing so that everyone that's here would have a chance to participate. And it's now my great pleasure to introduce a gentleman who's become a fast friend in the last, period of COVID times. My friend Les here tonight is celebrating 1 year of continuous sobriety. Congratulations, Les. And we look forward to hearing about how you did that. So thank you.
All right. Hello, my name is Les, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. As my sponsor said, the biggest group of quitters known to the world. And that's something I'm glad to be a part of, I could say, to be a quitter about something. It's interesting, when I first walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I always wanted to share, because it was all about me. And now, a time when I've been asked to speak, there's some nerves there, right? But I said, well, it's my story. I can't screw it up. And I was reassured that I definitely could screw it up. So there was some pressure added there. But the reality of it is that I've been able to follow the path of those that laid it out before me. I'm just going to speak from the heart and hope God speaks through me, as I'm sure He will, because He's helped me recover from this life-ending disease. And if He could do that, I'm sure He can help me get to 30, 45 minutes, right? So, my story began a long time ago. I'm now 35 years old, and I grew up in a diverse family in the sense that my mom would be what you would consider a non-alcoholic. I can't even ever really remember her drinking. Even to this day, I could probably only think of her drinking a few times. The most times I saw her drink was when I lived with her later in life, so that was probably understandable. But for the most part, she really didn't drink. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I decided to speak outside just to have some privacy, but I live off of a busy street, so you might get some background noise. The other side of the coin, I had my dad, who was, by all means, an alcoholic. I can't say that and put that on his life, but I'll say that for the purpose of this group. You know, only one considers themselves alcoholic. I can't do that for him. He is now passed. But I can remember from an early age learning how to pack his ice chest. Ice chest rolling around in the back of his truck. He always had one within reach. And it was considered basically the norm. And, through that genetic and environment, I was off to a start that I didn't even really know about at the time. Whether the story's been told to me enough, or I can actually remember it, I grew up in the Santa Fe Station. He was a bar owner, and I grew up in the Santa Fe Station in diapers, learning how to roll dice and hang around crowds of that sort. And, he was a pretty big-time guy around here. He was he was the leader of some illegal gambling, and by that he had a pretty big reputation. You know, a lot of people knew who he was, and I really enjoyed and looked up to that glamorous lifestyle from an early age. The fast life, the drinking, and the other outside issues. I am a poly-addicted person. I'm going to try to stick to alcohol as much as possible. If I slip, please forgive me, but I'm going to try to honor the sanctity of the Alcoholics Anonymous and speak specifically to drinking, because that has been the longest use and the most impactful part of my life. At about the age of five, because of my dad's activities, we had the FBI raid our household. And it's something that I can still have a memory to that. I'm sharing that because I'll explain it more as I worked my steps. But that was something that was pretty impactful. I can still remember my mom handing me off to my aunts my aunt, my uncle, and getting me out of the house and the people around the household. And that was just something that's just an everlasting memory that I, you know, I look back at every once in a while. The actual drinking for myself started at the age of 11. Sixth grade, I went to a private Catholic school, perfect place to start drinking, right? Right after church or something to that effect, we go and we start having some drinks. But no, I had a friend who had a brother, an older brother in high school, and they were starting to experiment with drinking, and we got an earlier jump start because his older brother was at that stage in his life. And the first time I got drunk, I can remember, it was off of two wine coolers. And I can still remember that euphoric feeling, despite smashing my head into a basketball pole and, you know, already knocking. I learned early on from that first drunk, you know, that shit happens. You know, I knocked my head into the basketball pole, got knocked silly a little bit. And that should have been an early sign, you know, maybe this isn't for you. But it was really just what was going to happen, a telltale sign of what was going to happen in the future. So the two wine coolers quickly transgressed into vodka. I think the next time we drank was vodka, and still in sixth grade. And immediately, I was already drinking on another level. I was drinking alcoholically. We drank to see who could. We had like one of those blood alcohol testers, our breathalyzers. And our goal was to see who can get the drunkest. And me being the smallest, I could drink the most and was the smallest size, and therefore would always ring the highest blood alcohol. And I thought that was an accomplishment. I thought I was the man. I won another competition. So that, you know, grade school continued, got through grade school, and then got into high school. And you know, high school was another story that we, coming from a Catholic school, I was kind of sheltered with a certain group of people, certain social statuses, right? And now I was exposed to a whole new world of different people and different cultures and different all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I shared my drunk log earlier today, you know, because I wanted to tell where I was at. But I was reminded, shortly after my morning meeting this morning, that what I was wasn't just a drinking problem. I also had a living problem when I was younger. I was a jerk. I was a dick. Because of insecurities that I had myself. You know, when working the four step, I found out that a lot of it was fear riddled. And direct reflection of, you know, some of my dad's dealings. So going in a private school, there was a certain social status there, and I didn't really fit that social status. And it sounds silly now, but as a kid, that's just how I felt. And I felt less than, you know, I felt not a part of. And as a result, even though no one was really, I mean, some kids picked on me because that's what kids do. But I took it to a whole nother level because I wanted to beat people to the punch. You know, I wanted to, be the one hurting people rather than getting hurt. And so, you know, I really had a living problem early on, and I continued to, mask that and make it more so with my drinking. Still drinking alcoholically. I can remember when I was 16 years old, you know, after football games, we'd rush to, as soon as the football game was over, my main concern was how fast I could get drunk before going into the school dances. So I found out how to be as efficient as possible. And what I would do is I'd have two half pints of Blue Label vodka in the back of my Bronco, and a thing of orange juice. And as soon as the game was over, I'd run to the locker room, I'd run to my car, I would drink all of the half pint in one drink. I'd take a 5 minute break, and then I'd drink the other half pint. So drinking 10 to 12 shots at once, age of 16, 100 proof vodka, weighing all of 100 pounds, you know, and, really just drinking beyond other people. But again, I thought I was just a better drinker than everybody else. That's all it was. It wasn't that I was an alcoholic. I was just better at drinking. Life continued. Got into my first bit of trouble. So my sponsor always tells me, and it's even in the book, that, drinking at first is fun. You know, I like the way it made me feel. It's fun. And then at a certain point, it becomes fun and trouble. And then by the end, it's just all trouble. Well, my fun and trouble started at about, I had to be, 17 years old. So I was just, it was the first New Year's that I had my license. And I was still on where you had to have, I just got where you didn't have to have your parents ride with you anymore. You can let people ride in the car with you. So I got to go to the coast. I borrowed my stepsister's truck by permission of my parents. And that weekend I got a DUI. Got a drunk, wet and reckless is what it worked out to be. But I got my first run in with the law at age 17. That was the longest 3 hours of my life to that point. You know, my parents had to come and pick me up, and I was like, hey, I'm never going to do this again. Got into my trouble, and this will never... Well, it didn't slow me down. I can't remember how long it was before I was drinking again. But again, like, my dad was so accepted that he didn't really get on me too much. My mom always kind of babied me, and I'm not giving them blame. I take complete responsibility for my actions. I want to make that clear. I didn't really learn my lesson. At that point, though, I did find religion. Even though I grew up in a Catholic school, I didn't really ever grasp onto it or cling onto it. But at that point, I found religion to help me get through this and really lean on God at that point. And then it was also a ploy for me to get a girl, because the girl I was trying to seek after at that point were her parents were both pastors. So I thought it would kill two birds with one stone. It saved my ass from my drinking and the trouble I was going to get into, and it also helped me get the grill. That only lasted a little bit, I was back at it. Fast forward into college, let me back up real quick. You know, and in high school, you know, kids can be difficult, I guess. I have one kid, and she's still young, but I think I was another level. I was mean to my mom. She did everything for me possible, and even up until, basically until I got into recovery, I was nothing but a jerk to her. I was only nice to her when I needed something. Again, still picking on people, and I just really had this hate and this meanness in my life, and I really can't pinpoint what it came from. But it was there. I went into college. I took a couple years of COS. And then ended up going away to college at 20 years old. And the first weekend I moved down to Long Beach, I get arrested. Way to kick off my new surroundings, right? Get arrested for drunk in public. And spent the night in the jail. And I can remember the guy I spent the night in the jail with. He told me he was a hitman for the mafia, or no, for the Mexican mafia. 20 years old, scared out of my mind in a new town. And this is how I was spending my first night. And again, told myself, fuck, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to live in this kind of life. You know, I'm going to straighten up. It probably didn't last a day. Got back and lived my college lifestyle. And during college, I had several more arrests. I can think of three more specifically. I've been arrested in Fresno County, Tulare County, San Luis County, Orange County, and LA County. So I like to spread it out, right? A little bit of love everywhere. But, and that was all over the matter of 6 years? 6 years or so? I think I got up to like 7 or 8 arrests. And that's, you know, for a while there, I thought that was something to be proud of. I really did. But it's not. I was getting promoted for a job, and it was coming back up here. So I never really thought I had a problem, and part of the reason was because I did fairly well with work. I maintained. The bills weren't always getting paid, but I always had a good job, and that led me to believe that I was doing okay. Before I got promoted, I met with the HR department. The HR department, I thought this was part of the normal interview process, but apparently it wasn't. They were sitting down with me because they ran a background check, and they asked if I had a drinking problem. And they were concerned that if I came back up north where my family had a bar, that I asked if it would be a problem. And I told them, no, it's not a problem. I just got in trouble a couple times. And they said, once, maybe twice, maybe, but 7-8 times, whatever you're at right now, that's probably more than a coincidence. And you'd think that would kind of knock me on the head and, tell me what's going on, but it didn't. Came back home. Just as they suspected, being around that easy access to alcohol where I bartended on the weekends, really fast-forwarded things. I had free reign to alcohol and women and other things, and I had it all at my fingertips, and I took full advantage of it. It wasn't long before I got fired from my own bar. My dad fired me more than once, and then I got fired from my real job. And lost the girl as well. And, the job and the girl at the time were everything that I thought that was going to be in my life forever. And, when I lost those, I lost it pretty hard. But I got back on my feet quickly, educated, fairly intelligent. But we know that intelligence isn't a combatant towards alcoholism, does not discriminate. And I got another job back down south, came back down here for 5 years, or came back down there for 5 years, got another job, things progressed with other outside issues, and I was really, really wearing away. Bills were running out of control, and I talk about financial stuff because it's just the result, but the jail stuff happened, and at one point, again, should have been a sign, but I lost my brother to a drunk driving accident about 6 years ago now, and I can still remember that call. What that morning looked like for me is pitiful and comprehensible moralization. I was walking to the bar at 7 o'clock in the morning in hopes to find my car that I left there the night before. I got the call from my dad that my brother had passed away. I sat in front of the school for about a minute or two and, cried. And then I worried about how I was going to get fucked up again so I could forget about it. And it wasn't even just to forget about it. That's how I lived my life regardless. Losing someone to especially a drinking-related accident, you think that would make me want to slow down or something like that, but it really didn't. And even worse than that, I had not even a tendency, I had a proclivity to drink and drive. I love drinking and driving. You couldn't, you'd say, hey, you're not driving, okay, and I'd sneak out the back door 5 minutes later and go and do it. I love that fast, reckless lifestyle, and I'm lucky to be alive today. That job, I was wearing myself thin, and I told my boss, hey, I gotta get out of here. I'm gonna quit. I gotta do something different. Shit's not going well. What are you gonna do? I'm gonna go and travel. And, he said, well, if you're gonna do that, that's a pretty good idea. I kinda like that. So, I thought I was gonna run away from my problems. And, old joke, if you haven't heard it before, the worst thing about changing geography is that you take yourself with you. And that's exactly what I did. I took myself with me. I went and traveled for 6 months. I got rid of some of the outside issues, but I drank harder than ever, and I became a daily drinker, which was never really a problem for me. I was always a binge drinker. I drank heavy on the weekends. I was always alcoholic, but I drank heavy, but I handled my shit, but I became a daily drinker. In a foreign land, and didn't get into any serious trouble, but I ended up making it back home 6 months instead of a year. I came back because my dad passed away, so naturally there was some feelings and some emotion there, and you know, he was my best friend, despite all that shit that, you know, that he exposed me to. Again, not his fault. That's the life that he knew, but he was my best friend, and it had an impact on me that I still have to deal with today. I still miss the guy. But I also don't know if I'd be sober today if he was still around, if that makes any sense. Because having, you know, being around that lifestyle and looking up to him, I don't know if I'd be here today like that. So, he passed away, and I started hitting it hard when I got back home, got back into the outside issues, drank even harder, and got a little bit of money from his estate, and spent that all on alcohol and drugs. And in February, he passed away in January. In February, I got into my second severe car accident. And I ran through a fence and a tree and a barbecue, and it looked like a bomb had gone off at this household. And come to find out that it was an away from home office, and a guy happened to be there, and he wasn't supposed to be there, and he pulled me from my burning car, and called the cops, and they came and got me, and I went to the hospital. I showed up to my mom's house after getting out of the hospital the next day, and with no money left, and just needing somewhere to go, and she took me in, being the mom that she is. But she, you know, I could tell I just broke her heart, and that wasn't the first time I broke her heart. And as soon as I was good enough to walk in, which was only a few days, we went to the hospital, and I went to go check my blood alcohol and kind of get some details on the situation, and they came back with a 0.39 blood alcohol, and then other things in my system. So I was convinced that I was going to be going to jail for a long time. Property damage, high blood alcohol. I went to go check my car out and see if I could recover it. When I got to the tow yard, the guy asked whose car it was, and I said it was mine. He said, I didn't expect to see that person alive. The car was completely smashed in and caught on fire, and it was all gray from all the fire in the area. Still didn't stop me. It took up until, and this, that was in 2019, took until 2020, early 2020, for me to find out that I had a little girl on the way. And this was my chance. This was my chance to get sober. I had never really fully wanted to get sober, but now that I had someone else to get sober for, that was what I was going to take. And you know, it started off, I'll get sober tomorrow, and then I'll get sober, you know, 6 months before she's here, and then I'll get sober a month before she's here, and then it was, you know, us rushing to the hospital, getting ready to rush to the hospital, me running back inside so I can drink a few beers before we drove to the hospital. And even while my girlfriend was in labor, leaving the hospital to take care of business. Because I didn't know how to deal with regular life sober. How was I going to deal with this big change? You know, this was something that, that I didn't know how to do. And, you know, I never said that, I never thought I was desperate or that the despair hit, but in hindsight, that moment when I was drinking and using during that labor, and it was the most precious time in my life, that was my moment of despair. You know, my hopelessness had finally hit. I finally really thoroughly wanted to quit, and I couldn't do it. Despite that, the girl came home, and I still stayed at it. And she was born in May, and that's where I was. And how did it all change was I finally got caught. My girlfriend knew that the drinking was going on, but she didn't know the outside issues were going on, and she happened to find something, and I was given the ultimatum, either the family or using and drinking. And so I said, I'll get help. And so we went to the Alano Club and sat down. That was in June. And it still took a while. I can remember sitting out in the Lano Club, and all I could think about was when the meeting was over so I can go and get jacked up. I was giving my effort, and I just was going to go and sit down in the meetings, but all I cared about was going to be able to get out of there as fast as possible and change the way I feel in one way or another. So that was, I believe, June 14th. I was admitted into an IOP program at the beginning of July. And the good thing about the IOP program came some accountability. They drug and alcohol tested you on a regular basis. So of course I got nice tore back, you know, the day when I went in, because I was gonna test dirty at first, so I gotta get tore up before I go there. So my initial sober date was July 13th. I went and hung out with some friends on July 17th because I'd been sober for 4 days at that point. And I had it under control, so I was good. I can go and hang out with some people. 4 days, that's a long time. And then, of course, I relapsed and drank again. I wouldn't even consider it a relapse because I never really stopped. I mean, I paused for a couple days. But July 18th hit, and I knew that if I tested dirty for drugs and alcohol again, that I was going to lose my family. And, you know, that was the catalyst to this process. And for a little while, it was willpower. My willpower wasn't very strong, but it was willpower for a little bit until I found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I tried to stop on my own before. I tried to stop when the baby was coming, and I couldn't do it. And it proved that to me. I remember going into my first meeting and talking about powerlessness. And I raised my hand because, again, I like to talk and be the spotlight of attention. And I refuse to believe I'm powerless over alcohol. And all the people that have been there for a while, you know, they kept their remarks to themselves because they probably heard something like that before. But I just told you a hell of a lot of reasons that demonstrate that I was powerless over alcohol. A lot of things have happened in my life, and I continued to drink and drink and drink. And yet I was still ignorant, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. And eventually, after a little bit, I go, okay, I could swallow this powerlessness deal. I could swallow this. I could definitely swallow my life to become unmanageable. That was pretty evident. My life was unmanageable, you know, through multiple car towings, arrests, all that stuff, loss of jobs, loss of skills, all that stuff. That was evident. But that powerlessness, I always believed I had control over what happened in my life. Next big hurdle was God, right? Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It doesn't say God there. A power greater than myself, and that saved my ass. That saved my ass because I had this preconceived notion of what God was, and I didn't have much of a relationship with him. That power greater than myself gave me a door. My sponsor compares it to a crack in the door. So I had a crack in the door, and I let that God-sized power come to that door. I gave it a chance, and I mean, he made himself evident so many times in my life. I mean, I should be dead. I should be dead. I shouldn't have, you know, you see a background in my house. I shouldn't have a house to live in. I should be living out of my car in the streets. I shouldn't have a beautiful family. God has shown his grace in my life more times over and over, and I chose to turn my back. He never turned his back on me. I turned mine on him. You know, that chapter, We the Agnostics, really helped me. That really, really helped me. And as much as I would like to think that it was for me, it was written a long time ago. You know, it was written a long time ago, but there's many people like me. And that's what I really like about this program. It's really all-inclusive, and it gives people the opportunity to find it from different avenues, taking a different path. But then once you get into the steps are pretty defined and pretty laid out for you. So I found a sponsor. You know, those first couple steps were just reading through my meetings. I found a sponsor in the first 30 days of the IOP program as prescribed. I chose the person that was the loudest in the room because obviously he knew the most, and that was the one that was the most attractive. You know, it... And that's all that mattered. He helped me start the steps. But eventually I found a guy who was referred to me by my girlfriend's uncle. And when I called this guy, I texted him, actually. I'd had his number in my car for 2 months. And finally, I was like, I've had enough. So in August, mid-August, I texted him about a month of being sober, because I was sober, but I was still miserable and still living a shitty life. And I texted him, and I wanted some help and some assistance. And he just said, I'm in Alaska. I'll be back on August 24th. Call me when I get back. But he asked if I was okay. He asked if I was okay, and that's what he cared about first and foremost. The guy I'd never met in my entire life, and he cared about how I was doing. And that meant a lot to me. August 24th rolls around. I didn't call him because I was always getting back from Alaska. I'll give him a day, and he calls me on or texts me on August 25th. Hey, I didn't hear from you yesterday. Where are you at? And he got a hold of my ass and told me to meet him at Applebee's, and we met, and that started the process of really, really working the steps. You know, I give all of my gratitude and all of my everything that I've accomplished over this year to God, and you know, to the people that have helped me through this. I take no responsibility for the good things that have happened. But what I will say is that I did work the program to the best of my ability. I'm not a morning person. I'm not a morning person at all. But I met with that guy for about 2 hours every single Friday for 9 months straight. I showed up at his house and I did the work. I put in the work and I was into action. We got into the four step. You know, I identified what a lot of my character defects were and what was the root cause, which was fear. I talked about the fear of being less than, the fear of not being a part of, the financial insecurities. There's all that stuff, and it really helped me to pinpoint and then really apply some of that stuff today, you know. And it was during that four step that I really had my connection with God. I was talking with my sponsee about it later. Yes, this morning. Yes, I have a sponsee now. Couldn't take care of myself a year ago, and now I have a kid and a sponsee that I'm trying to share the message with. And that's a miracle in itself. The fact that anyone wants to fucking listen to a guy that's an alcoholic is of my sorts. But I have some experience, some strength, and some hope to share with them. Because if I can do it, I feel that anyone can do it. You know? And my sponsor at one point told me that, you're not that bad. And I said, well, either he's full of shit or the people in AA are pretty jacked up and I'm in the right place. I don't know which one it was, but he always had the right things to say. You know, he always had the right things to say to me. And so when I had that connection with God, I was sitting on my couch working the four step. I still was having some significant, I was not emotionally sober. I was physically sober, but I was not emotionally sober. And I was talking about it today. I don't know why this happened, but I envisioned a bud, and I just envisioned it flowering. And I just thought about how cool that was. How cool that was, and how something had to happen to make that happen. And that was too much of a coincidence for it to happen by coincidence. And then I started to think about all the other coincidences in life, and you know, at that point I realized that I would never be alone again. I still haven't fully wrapped my head around what my higher power looks like, but I know that there is a power greater than myself. I continue to work the steps. You know, I thought I was, there's two more amends that I have to make, and I'm waiting to make them in person because they'll be back for holidays. But I was reminded today, of the kind of person that I was. So I'm sitting here, kind of on cloud nine, kind of in the pink cloud. And, again, I'm a lot more humble. I still have some ego issues, but, you know, I was kind of reflecting on this last year. Just got out of my birthday meeting this morning, and a person that I haven't talked to since probably 2003, sent me a clip on social media and said, "Is this why you used to hit me in the back of the head every day, you piece of shit?" And honestly, I didn't remember what the hell he was talking about. I didn't know what he was talking about for a while, but after I sat and reflected for a while, I was in a couple of classes with this guy, and I used to pick on him. I used to pick on him, hit him in the back of the head, and do other shit. He was one of many, and that's probably why I couldn't remember. But I told him, you know what? You know, I'm sorry for what I did. Funny that you reached out to me today, because I'm going through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, where I'm having to make amends with people, and I can't take back what I did. But if there's anything I can do for you today, you please let me know, and I'll try to do that, because I should not have done that to you. And he said, you know what, it's all right, we were just kids. And I said, it's not all right. It's not all right, and I appreciate you saying that, but I knew better, and I knew right from wrong, and I shouldn't have made you feel like that. I said, you weren't the only one, and I appreciate you saying that, but what you can do for me is by teaching your daughter what's right from wrong. And teaching that people that are different are okay too. And, you know, that's been one of my number one goals through this all is to be a good role model for my daughter. My dad wasn't a bad person, but he didn't always set the best example. And I won't be perfect either, but I'll do my damn best. I explained that to him. But the timing, right, man, just the God shot, then he just like, hey, you got some more work to do, Les. You got some more work to do. So that's what got me here. And then just to kind of bring it all in and on where I'm at today, you know, life's changed. Life's changed immensely. And mostly for the better. I'm not going to say it's perfect. The hardest part on it all is not the drinking. Even when shit goes bad, I don't want to go and solve it by a drink because it's not going to solve anything. It's going to be the answer for a moment, but it's not going to be the solution. Not going to fix anything. It's most certainly going to make it worse. It won't be a one-time occurrence, so it won't be just one. I know that. I have the inability to control my drinking. I am an alcoholic. What's hardest for me is to learn how to live life. Because I've never done it sober before. And, you know, the relationship stuff, whether it be... you know, the girlfriend at home or the family members or the work relationships, that's all new. You know, I didn't know how to do all that. I talked about being an asshole to everybody, so I had to figure out how to change with that through the help of God. But I know I've had that spiritual experience because I've had people come up to me and someone said, "Hey, someone was talking about you the other day," and I just said, "Oh shit, what were they talking about?" You know, usually it's something crazy less than. They're just saying, "Oh, how good of a person you are and how helpful you are to the kids," because I coach Little League. And I was kind of blown away, you know. I do like hearing those affirmations, I'm not going to lie. It was some inflation in my ego. But more than anything else, it was letting me know that other people saw the work I've been putting in my life with through Alcoholics Anonymous, by working the steps and living the steps. Does that mean I'm perfect? No. Had to do a 10th step today. Had to do a 10th step 20 minutes before this meeting, you know, because I continue to fall back on my ass sometimes. But, you know, as long as I continue to work and to the best of my ability, share the message with others, attend meetings, be of service. So I got into service early on. Valley Noon Group, got into secretarying there very early on. I think I was 60 or 90 days in, got myself plugged in there. Found myself a home group, found myself a sponsor. What I did was I fucking listened for once. I listened to what was suggested for me. And who would have thought it worked out? It worked out. I'm so thankful that there was a prescription laid out for me in the first 164 pages. Because all I had to do was read it and follow it. And that was the answer to most of my problems. Does that mean everything's gone? Does that mean I'm the richest man in the world? Does that mean that my girlfriend and I get along every day? No, that doesn't mean any of that. I live in some sort of spiritual and emotional sobriety that I never had before. And when something happens, it's not the end of the world. You know, my days go like this. I wake up, I do the third step prayer, pray for other people. I do my morning meditations through 5 or 6 books. I reach out to five plus people in the program. And I try to share the message that I've learned in my morning meditations. And I stay active in the program. I do that, I won't say with 100%, but I do that damn near almost every single day. And that helps me get outside of myself, helps me continue to learn the selflessness that's needed in this program. You know, I'm just thankful for a new way of life, because I don't know where I would be today if I wouldn't have found Alcoholics Anonymous, but it wouldn't have been a good spot. I know that much. And man, just to be able to be here and be present for the little girl and for others is second to none. Someone told me today the first year is easy. I debated that a little bit, but I don't want to debate it too much because I've only been here a year, so I don't know what the rest of it looks like. But he said, you know, his point was is that, you know, you get these little points of recognition, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months. You don't get those attaboys anymore. But my disagreement with that is I do. I get those attaboys when I get home and see that girl every day. And I get to be here sober to enjoy that. I get those attaboys when I get to live life and not be emotionally disturbed. I may not get the tokens and stuff like that, but I get the other benefits that I may get to see on a daily basis. I appreciate you asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. I hope I think the 45 minutes is good. I've been timing myself, so I'll be good on that. But I'm a work in progress, so I appreciate it, and thank you for letting me share.
Hey, fantastic, Les. Thanks so very much. Great story. Great story. So we are now going to start the discussion part of our meeting, and we'd like to hear from as many people as possible. So I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Les to pick on people to share.
I hear from the rest of y'all all the time. Kate, would you mind, would you like to share tonight?
Sure, no problem. I'm actually in this meeting because my mom listened to you speak this morning, Les, so kind of funny. I definitely appreciated your story. I'm super new out of Changing Echoes. I've been out for about 3 weeks right now, so I really appreciate, like, just being able to listen to everybody's stories right now and how I relate, and definitely appreciated your story. There's a lot I could relate to in there, especially I've got my own little girl at home, and I kind of thought, like, once I had her, it would change my life, and it would be easier to be sober and do the better thing, and when I realized that it wasn't, I felt really bad. That was my first, like, wanting to apologize to anybody when I first got to treatment is putting all on her to make a better life for myself, but I needed to do it for myself on my own and not because of her, but for her, really. So I definitely appreciated that part of your story, and just still trying to grasp everything. I do have a sponsor. I'm working my steps, trying to hit the ground running with this. Trying to go to as many meetings as I can, listen to as many people as I can, and take everything in. Don't know if I'm doing a good or bad job yet, but I'm trying to put as much effort forward as I can at this point.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for coming to the meeting today as well. Tell your mom I said hi.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Oren, you'd like to share?
Oh, you know I'd like to share, brother. Hello, everybody. We're an alcoholic. First, I just want to thank my creator for another day of sobriety. Man, Russ, thank you, bro. You know, I a lot of similarity, especially in the emotional part of your story, you know, like, you know, the emotions that you were feeling at certain times, you know, like, I see myself looked up a lot to my dad, you know, I still do, you know, I mean, he's able to drink beer and I'm not, you know, like, really, that's pretty much where it is, and he was the kind of guy that didn't put up with a lot, you know, and I have always wanted to be like him, which got me into a lot of trouble, you know, it got me into a lot of trouble, man, and so I could relate to that, you know, not that my dad was like a really bad dude, but, you know, he didn't tolerate much, so I grew up seeing him fight all the time, you know, and kind of did something to me, and did something to me in a form of me not being scared to do the same thing, you know, and I was kind of like the opposite of you. It's like crazy hearing your story because I grew up with a lot of anger in my life that, you know, I've always looked for the fight, but I looked at the fight for the fight and people that were being bullies. You know, like I fought a lot of people that bullied the little kids that were in my same grade and stuff like that. And it's pretty amazing to see like the differences, you know, like again, man, the alcoholics, when they tell us, you know, we're people that normally not mix, man, but, it's awesome to see that flip side of how I grew up. You know what I mean? But like you said, I mean, we all got something in common, man, and that's this disease of alcoholism that takes us to places we never wanted to be, you know, in our life. And I could totally relate to what you said, too, when you said about, you know, being under the influence where your daughter was coming into the world and stuff, too, man. Like, I did that with my son, you know. Not the newborn. The newborn, you know, thank my creator that he's never been a part of, you know, I never drank well, you know, just been, but my other son, my junior, I was on pills and I was drinking, you know, at that time. I popped a couple pills, slammed a pint of whiskey and went to the hospital with him, you know, to watch him be born. And definitely not something I'm proud of, man. But like you said, you know, you found that desperation, you know, you hit that desperate moment, man, to where you needed something to change in your life, you know, and here you are, man. Look at you, you're in, brother. I'm proud of you, man. You know, like, that's one thing that keeps me coming back is just seeing that this program works, man. No matter how bad you thought you were or how bad you were at points in your life, like, we do recover, you know? And I'm not saying that I'm going to be cured from alcoholism. Like, nah, this is something that's going to be a part of my life forever. You know, I'm always going to have that reaction to alcohol to where I no longer have any control over what I do right when that drink hits my taste buds, you know? Like, and I understand that, but that state of mind, you know, that's what I'm learning about now. That state of mind that I once was in, I don't have to be there anymore. You know, all this trauma that I went through as a child, all the trauma that I put myself in and drama that I put myself in as an adult, I could let it go today. You know, I could talk to my creator today and I could humble myself, you know, and a big part of it has been, like you said, too, just being of service, man, being of service. You know, this Saturday, I had the blessing of participating in my first H&I panel, you know, and it was awesome, man. It was awesome, bro. Like, I can't, you know, I went to the same recovery center where I got my start, you know, and I got to talk to a whole group of new people. You know what I mean? A whole group of new people, man, that was there, and meet some of them in person, and it was pretty cool, you know, like, because after the meeting, you know, like, they were asking me questions, and it felt good, you know, it felt good because you could see some of them were eager to learn, you know, like, that's how I was when I was first in there, you know, like, I was so desperate, man, like, I needed something to cling on to, and that's why I said it's like, desperation was a gift, you know, for myself, man, because if I didn't hit that desperate moment, I'd still be out there doing what I was doing, thinking I was okay, thinking it was just fine, you know, but it's only through my creator's good graces that he allowed me to be blessed with that desperation that I wanted to get sober and I wanted to get right, you know, and today I'm learning that I need to do that for myself first, you know, I need to literally put my program before anything else in life in order for everything else to fall into place, and it has been. You know, it's like you said, it's not perfect, you know, I mean, especially bringing up all this old stuff that I've been through, memories that I actually suppressed, you know, that were suppressed, you know, through my drinking and stuff, are finally starting to come to light, and I'm like, damn, that happened? You know, like, what the hell, you know what I mean? Like, and I get to deal with it. I get to deal with it today. I don't have no secrets today, man. You know, like, that's one thing that they say, you know, like, we're only as sick as our secrets, and today I don't have no secrets. Like, when I went to the recovery center yesterday, I let it out, man. I told them my story exactly how it was. I didn't try to make it sound good in any way. I let them know how bad I was, you know, how you should drive around and don't even remember making it home when I have two of my little kids with me. You know, and that's something I'm not proud of. I'm definitely not proud of that. I don't want anybody, you know, like, and about the violent side of drinking, you know, like, I'm not proud of any of that, man. But I had to tell them because, you know what, we're around a bunch of like-minded individuals that need to hear that story, raw and uncut. You know what I mean? They need to hear that, man. A lot of them need to hear that the jails, institutions, and prisons, you know, like, I've been there. You know, like, I literally been there, and I don't ever have to go back again. You know, that's the main thing that I can get across to them is I don't have to go back there again, you know. I don't have to pick up another drink. You know, as long as I stay in today, and I understand that saying now, you know, it's only one day at a time. Like, I used to think, how the hell does somebody live one day at a time when I got shit to do tomorrow, and the next day, you know? But it's as it pertains to my alcohol addiction, as it pertains to alcohol, you know? I don't got to drink today, one day at a time, man. And everything else falls into place. And I thank you, brother, for your experience, strength, and hope. And you give me courage and experience, strength, and hope to talk about things that I'm not proud of. You know, like, thank you, Tia, for being part of my sobriety and trudging this road with me, man. You know, like one of the guys in our group always says, you know, trudging's a, you know, down and dirty job, but, you know, we got to do it, right? In order to make it through our past, we got to trudge through all that bullshit that we had in front of us, you know what I mean? And that was keeping us away from that road to happy destiny, you know. So thank you very much, man, and I appreciate you guys. I'm going to continue with the rest of this 24.
Thanks, Oren. Bill, you're up.
I was going to read your mind. I was going to predict who you might pick next. Hey, Les, thanks for the internet, brother. I tell you, it has really been a great joy the last year to get to know you and to get to serve with you. And that goes for my friend Oren, too. Oren's been with us, I think it's just short of 6 months yet, right? Yeah, coming up on 6 months here pretty soon. And gosh, I look forward to getting to know Kate better. I'm just going to go ahead and admit it because I think I have early onset dementia or I just drank too much and killed too many brain cells, but I forget things, and so I kind of introduced myself by chat to Kate, and she reminded me that I met her, I think it was last week. Well, you know, I'd rather laugh at myself than have everyone else laughing at me, so I've just learned it's easiest to do that and be silly. And you reminded me, Les, of a number of things about myself. I think you're the first person, in the time that I've been sober, you're the first person that I recall describing themselves as having a proclivity. And the reason that's so funny to me is that I thought I was really pretty snappy showed up talking about my proclivities, realizing that there were many people in the room who had no idea what the hell I was talking about, and that, I don't know why that excited me, you know, I guess somehow I thought somehow I was, you know, more better than the rest, and I'm so glad that I've had some opportunities to learn the truth about that situation. You were reflecting on your earlier days and how it sounded to me anyway, like you were really amazed that you're still alive. And I think back about so many of the stupid things that I've done, and it's really quite shocking that I'm still alive too. I'm glad we're both still alive. And You also talked about the impact that your sponsors had on you and the commitment that you made to meeting with them regularly. I did the same thing, man. I met with my sponsor every week, and we talked about the assignments that he gave me to get me through the 12 steps and what a tremendous impact that had on me. I mean, when I showed up, I was I'm going to describe myself as being an angry person, a very angry person. I don't know if you would have met me in my first even 6 months if you would have thought of me as angry, because you probably would have thought of me more as just a jackass, you know, who's always trying to be funny. And I used what I called a sense of humor as a way to defend myself against my perception of an attack. You know, if you might, and then this especially happened in I should probably explain. I was greeted with a surprise party, which is a nice way of saying that my family planned an intervention, right? And they sent me away for treatment, and the gig was up. There was no more. Well, maybe Bill has a problem drinking. It was out on the table. That was it. It was flat. I was not welcome anywhere with a drink in my hand. And so, for several months, I did not embrace that truth about myself. But eventually, I did, and I jumped in with both feet, and I did it all wrong. I made all the mistakes that you make in AA. I thought I was, some kind of special class of alcoholic that didn't have to go through the steps. I thought that, it was important to get to meetings late and leave early, and just I had all kinds of crazy notions, and so. But I did find myself surrounded by these recovery people, right? I was, for help, I was going to, because I kept relapsing, I never could get out of the damned outpatient program that I got into, right? And so 3 nights a week, I'm spending 3 hours a day in group, right? And then they make you go to 3 or 4 meetings on top of that. I mean, I got nothing but sobriety around me, right? And I don't like it, and I don't want it. Okay, keep your attitudes and your opinions and your cheery little effort to help to yourself. Thank you very much. But I was surrounded by that. That's what my life really just revolved around, and so the way I would defend myself in that environment was by trying to be funny, because people were always trying to help me. They were trying to help me in a way that I really didn't want them to help me. They were trying to help me to see the truth about my situation. And, you know, I find myself oftentimes trying to do the same for other people today. And I have to remember that, there's a lot of people who show up in our meetings who aren't ready for the truth, just the same way I wasn't ready for the truth. And so I think there's a fine line that I have to continue to learn how to walk in. That is, how do I be encouraging, and how do I try to maybe who would have ever thought this was possible, but is it possible for me to even try to inspire somebody to do better, right? To know better and to do better. And because of the things that have happened in my life, I get a chance to interact with people that I think sometimes could benefit by that. And I did the same thing, like you talked about, jumping into the steps and jumping into service. I remember at about 90 days sober, I had an interaction where some poor sucker from a treatment place asked me to sponsor him, and I just laughed practically, right? Because I thought, dude, I'm like 90 days sober. Okay, here's an important qualifier again, right? Like, I've already been 90 days sober before. I'm probably going to be 90 days sober again. This is just another part of the cycle for me, right? So look, man, I'm going to probably kill you if you want my help. That was my thinking. And I called my sponsor, and I told him, you know, I thought he would think it as funny as I thought it was, that some poor sucker would ask me for help. And he turned it around on me the way he turned a lot of things around on me. And he said, so let me get this right. You're not willing to do for me or for him what I'm doing for you. And I heard that. And I told him I was afraid. And he told me, that's okay, man. There's help available. I'm here, right here. If you have a question, give me a call. And so I got into sponsorship pretty early, too. And then I got into H&I work. And I fell into something there, not for the right reasons, if you want to know the truth. But I fell into service in H&I, and I found I just really liked it. And I've managed to evolve and get better, right? So I think that my motives for doing service have matured as I've matured, and I still have a lot of maturing to do. You said about yourself, Les, you're a work in progress. Hell, I made a shirt that says that because it's so true, you know. And I don't know if this is necessarily going to be true for all of you, but in a way, I kind of hope that it is. It's certainly true for me that I have this capacity to forget important things that just boggles my mind. I seem to have to learn the same important lessons over and over and over. I mean, they look a little different, right? The circumstances have changed, the players have changed, but at the end of the day, oftentimes when I get to the solution, I'm finding many times that, gosh, you know what? I've landed on this one before, and sometimes I think I shouldn't have to learn that again, and then I'm reminded about what a tremendous blessing it is that I get to learn it again. That I still have people surrounding me who are willing to help me when I need help, and so may that ever be our curse, if you will, that we need ongoing help and that we avail ourselves of that help. One last thing I wanted to make note of. I, too, am alum of Changing Echoes, so just one more thing in common with my new friend, Kate. So I look forward to seeing you guys all again soon. And Les, thanks again for, thanks for, not burning your life to the ground anymore, for at least for the last year, right? Because it's inspiring to me, and I know this really sounds crazy, but sometimes I forget, it's real easy for me to also forget about the wholesale miracles that have happened in my life. I'll give you an example that happened today. I was going to take a nap, and I don't know, I was stirring, and I couldn't quite sleep, so I decided to get up and eat, you know, two wonderful habits to have, sleeping and eating. And I get up, and I make this little sort of strawberry shortcake thing, and I get out the whipped cream, right, and I start putting the whipped cream on it, and I get to the bottom of the whipped cream thing, and it's not quite as much as I want. And I'm continuing to push it, and I'm trying to, like, force more of the whipped cream to come out of the spout, and what's coming out is just gas, and the thought that crossed my mind, and I'm sorry if this offends anyone with a frail attitude towards our primary purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous, but for a moment I thought, well, nobody'd really know if I just sucked the gas out of this can, right? That thought crossed my mind today. I didn't do it. After I put the can in the trash and went and got a new one and finished with my whipped cream on it, I thought, my God, how could that thought even cross my mind? How could I even for a moment think about throwing away this sober life that I enjoy? And because I'll tell you, One whipped cream can ain't going to be enough, baby. You know? And shit like that makes me thirsty. Makes me really thirsty. So, thankfully, I don't have to go there today. But just a miracle. Just a miracle. Thanks, guys. Love you. Oh, and I guess that's the end. So let me give you some closing announcements.